or non-work-related activity. And all of you know that. We have extra available time, and this is not necessarily wrong. I want you to know that. The large crowds that heard Jesus teach must have had some free time also, or they could not have been out there on the hillsides, thousands of people strong, listening to Christ. They must have had some extra time or else took off work because they spent large amounts of time out there. And it took them a long time to get there, to where they traveled to hear these sermons, and then they had to go back again. And there was no shuttle service. They had chosen to use their time wisely, it seems to me. I heard when I was young something that I believed and still believe it. So this is not a one-sided subject. You'll tell that when I say this. Someone has said that all work and no play makes Jack a dull boy. And it does. Is that true, Marcus? Say amen. It makes Jack a dull boy. All he does is grindstone. You don't do well like that. That is not good for Jack. Or put your own name in there. Here we got Jonathan sitting here. Over there is Carletta. I don't know what her name is. Sitting beside you there, Dolores. Joella, yeah. That'd make a dull girl. Yet, not all is well with reduced work weeks, with ever-increasing minimum wages, increased social benefits. Not all is well with that climate that we are in. Look at how people use their spare time. Houses are only motels. Families do not live in them. They seldom eat in those houses and do little in there besides swipe their phones when they are there. And sin abounds, and homes are destroyed, and marriages fail, and crime increases. And in the midst of all this, there's a place along Highway 53 called Grace Christian Fellowship. So I want you to get the importance of that. How does God want us to respond to this situation in our time? Now, as far as I understand it, that is God, and the God of our Bibles, and what we read in our Bible, is not against wholesome recreation. I'll take you a little Bible journey. Are you ready to go along? Look at Mark chapter 6. And here I'd like to read one or two verses. Verses 31 to 32. This is Jesus speaking. They were very busy here. Verse 31, and he said unto them, come ye yourselves apart into a desert place and rest a while. For there were many coming and going, and they had no leisure so much as to eat. And they departed into a desert place by ship privately. Now I'll show you that Jesus believed in wholesome recreation. Look at these words here. Come ye apart. A change of vocation, a change of busyness, a change of scenery, a change of activity. And they went out to a place alone away. It's called here a private place, a desert place where it's private. And Jesus told them in verse 31 that he wants them to rest a while. That didn't mean they were going out there to sleep. They didn't take their hammocks along. But the rest there is a change from what they were used to. It was a alleviating the heaviness of the schedule. And you notice it says in verse 31, towards the end of the verse, that they had no leisure. They could hardly eat. This is not good. We need to recreate. We need to get this back to normal. We need to get something restored here. You see, this is, talk about recreation. This is very easy to see. I gave you four or five phrases that indicate the recreation nature, the recreating nature of Jesus' invitation here. You get that, John? If you don't get it, they won't get it. Now, I'm going to say one more thing about it. I want to have the boys to laugh. But they didn't walk there. They got a boat, took a boat ride to get there. Just don't tell anybody else that, but that's between you and me. Okay. But that's what they did. And they rode across there. You get that? It's all in there. And so what I'm saying is the Bible's not totally against this. The Bible has something to say here. Even a time of physical activity has at least some value for all of us. Bodily exercise profiteth little. And compared, he's comparing it there with godliness, which contentment is great, great gain. But he's saying that even physical exercise, physical activity has some value. And it does. Our Lord Jesus, on at least one occasion, sponsored a cookout by the Sea of Galilee. And these disciples were out there in the boat. They didn't know that he was on the shore. By the time they get in there, they got close to there. They had no fish in their net. But Jesus had some bread there, and he had some coals burning there. He had some kind of a barbecue grill or something going on. And he had a fish on there or something. He told them to go out there and try that net again. And then they got a lot of stuff. And they said, bring this fish over here. And they started preparing this fish. And they ate it. Jesus took this thing that he cooked there. And he blessed that and broke it and shared it with them. So we have this little cookout there by the seaside with very few people present. But I'm sure, I think there are only seven disciples present there with Jesus. But it was a very meaningful time. And he sponsored that. Good Canuck. The apostles, and especially Paul, were quite acquainted with the Olympic Games, and they made the allusion to those games in their teaching. And just on Wednesday night in this chapel, Brother Mervyn Troyer took that passage from 1 Corinthians 9, where there's allusion there to running that race, and he applied it to the brothers and sisters of this congregation. And that's what Paul did. He was acquainted with those things, and he was acquainted with racing and running. He knew how that worked. He was aware of it and used that those illustrations in his teaching. Now, they said that all work and no play makes Jack a dull boy, but Jesus did not like it if children don't have a chance to play. I'm going to prove that to you in Zechariah chapter 8. I'll read verses 3 through 6 to you here. Zechariah 8, verse 3. Thus saith the Lord, I am returned unto Zion and will dwell in the midst of Jerusalem, and Jerusalem shall be called a city of truth, and the mountain of the Lord of hosts, the holy mountain. Thus saith the Lord of hosts, there shall yet old men and old women dwell in the streets of Jerusalem, and every man with his staff in his hand for very age. And the streets of the city shall be full of boys and girls playing in the streets thereof. Thus saith the Lord of hosts, if it be marvelous in the eyes of the remnant of this people in these days, should it also be marvelous in mine eyes, saith the Lord of hosts. He was looking forward to that. That's what he wanted to see. Not a bad thing. Now the benefits of wholesome recreation, I think, are well known to most of you. And this is wholesome recreation. This is not foolishness. You know that in recreation there's also often physical stimulation and effort, which maybe the normal person does not get always or in the same way. Now, a dairy farmer or a block layer gets plenty of exercise. Maybe he doesn't need any more physical effort. But not all people get that. And sometimes a dairy farmer or a block layer might benefit from using his body in a slightly different way. But exercise and stimulation is a good thing. But a change in routine can be healthy. Okay, so you see those dairy cows every morning, and you see that you see that line drawn tight over the foundation, and you lay that thing full of blocks or bricks. And sometimes changing your vistas, changing your scenery is a good thing for you. It's a healthy change. New things to look at. Opportunities for new skills like rowing a canoe instead of carrying a milk bucket or throwing a hay bale. How many of you knew how to paddle a canoe without ever moving your paddle from one side of the canoe to the other? And keep a straight line. If you don't know that, there's some skill out there that you can learn that would do you good. Yeah, my wife and I used to like to go canoeing. We haven't done it for over 50 years, but I would enjoy going canoeing again if I could manage to do it. But make sure it's an old town canoe, not one of those aluminum pieces of junk. Make sure it's an old town canoe from Old Town, Maine. Those are the best canoes that there are. So that's just the way that is there. And you'll find that rowing a canoe is quite different from screwing on metal onto a building, onto a carport. It's just a very different thing, or screwing plywood onto a mini barn. And then there's the benefit in wholesome recreation of social interchange. That is a very valuable thing, and that's why I like to say very much about what was said over here. If it's wholesome recreation and improves my relationship with other people and does not ruin my relationship with other people. Now, I was talking to you about some Bible examples of recreation. I'm going to share this one with you. This one I did not mention. Earlier here in this congregation, I spoke to you about the fact that Jesus spent a lot of time in the Bible eating meals with people. Does anyone remember that? Maybe that went through the sieve by this time. But you will notice that he had a little excursion that he pulled off when he had an opportunity to do it. In the town of Bethany, where did Jesus go when he had an opportunity to do it? Mary, Martha, and Lazarus' house. And that was a common thing for Jesus to do. That was not a once and done thing. He went over there. And you see the social benefit that must have been for him. You see the restful exchange that makes from the taunting crowds that are out there and the accusations that were brought against him. And now he's in the home of friends and he's at rest and it's a blessing and there's comfort there. There's fellowship there. That's recreation. That's wholesome recreation. And they did him a lot of good, and he did them good. This is wholesome recreation. And for Christian, at these refreshing times, God is present, God is evident, and God is eminent. God is prominent at that time. Now, this will all make more sense to you if I would read to you the next paragraph. It will make more sense. It would put this into perspective, what I just said about the values of wholesome recreation. And those values were based upon what we read in the Bible there. But you will get more benefit out of this if I do the following. So just hold on and listen. You might may not expect to hear this in this session tonight, but as a father, I failed greatly in this area. And maybe I can justify myself a little bit by explaining why I was such a failure in this area of life. Recreation was not a part of our family life. It was not part of my life as a boy. It was not part of our family life as we were married. Our children virtually did not know what recreation was. No, neither did I. If you don't know what something is, where are you going to learn about it? I never went hunting or fishing in my life. Of course, if that's the case, that means that I never took my family to do that. I never did it. They never did it either. We never did that. I never had a fishing pole. I never put one in the water. I guess you just put the end in, don't you? but I never did it. And people tell me you're not a whole person if you never sat by a stream and watch that thing bob up and down in the water. There's something wrong with you. And probably there is. But I'm telling you that I didn't have that. By the time I was 11 years old, I started working away from home supporting my dad, bringing the money home so he could help provide for the family. I was from 11 years of age, and that hasn't stopped until this day. Everything was just put in motion to work, to get something done, to be productive, to move something forward, to get the job finished. That's the way I was wired. Understand? And you wire your children like that, and you made a mistake. Do you understand that, Marcus? There's a mistake there somewhere. And I criticized other people who I saw making recreation or their time out things a priority. They did that. They built it into their schedule. They built it into their yearly program. And I couldn't understand that. I thought these people, you know, get converted, get the job done. What's the matter with you? That's the way I thought. Doesn't make any sense to you, does it, John?
Yeah, I understand it.
That's the way I lived. We lived here in Tennessee, and there were droughts, and there was no way to pay the bills. I didn't go to an eye doctor for 9 years. We had terrible trouble here, and we were running a dairy farm. I had a full-time electrical business. Most of that work was done in Murfreesboro, not all of it. We made pallets in the evening. After supper, after the cows were milked, that was done. I was home from the electrical job. We went out to shop and built pallets until we got a stack of them done. And now it's late at night. Now we go to bed and we start the next morning. That's the way we lived here. Beside that, there was a church to take care of. And life wasn't very pleasant. And I'm very sorry about that today. One day we did something I can't believe. I don't know why we did it, how we did it, how I learned about it. I don't know, but it took the family. One day we took off one day, went over to Fall Creek Falls, and we spent a day over there. And I think that's the only time we did that. But there we were. We spent one day at Fall Creek Falls. That's over there near where you people are acquainted. And I don't know what the children thought of that. My guess is that they did not enjoy it, and I will tell you why. I don't think they were ever taught how to enjoy something like that. I think they probably thought they might get in trouble because of what they didn't get done at home because they were there at Fall Creek Falls. My guess is that that's how they spent the day, because they weren't used to it. They didn't know what to do there. I don't think they knew how to really benefit from that day off. You understand me? No, you don't, but that's the way it was. One day I told them that if we get a 35-5 average on the dairy farm, that is 35 pounds of milk a day with a 5% butter fat, I will take them to Shoney's restaurant down in Manchester. There was a Shoney's down there. It's not there now, but it was down there at the red light on the right side of the road. So we got a 35-5, and I drove the family down there for supper, the only time I ever took them out to eat. It's the first time that I know of. And lo and behold, they have a smorgasbord there. You take your plate, you put in there what you want to put in there. And some of you know my son, Nate. And he got a plate. They have stack of plates there. You can get various sized plates. He got a plate and went down through all that food and looked in there and didn't know what to do. So he put 3 Ritz crackers on there and a piece of cheese and went and sat down at the table. He did not know what to eat. He did not know what food to get. He did not know what it was. He got 3 Ritz crackers and a piece of cheese and sat down. And when I saw that, I could have cried. Because I immediately felt, it's my fault. And I didn't know what to do. I was trying to show the family a treat. I was trying to do something for my family. And we didn't know what it was. I do not recommend that for you. I don't recommend that way of living for you. There's something wrong with that. Now, we're going to talk about something else a little later on that's wrong also, but there was something wrong with this. But I did not know it. And so, I'm sorry about that. That's just the way that life was. And I gave you this illustration to throw that in contrast to what we were just reading about there. It came from the Bible. A considerable contrast there. Come apart. Let's go to a remote place. Let's go across there in a boat. Let's get some rest. Let's have some leisure. Right? That's what Jesus thought about his disciples. And here's Dale with his family. Now, we're going to start to change gears here. Let's stop. What comments do you have? What is something that you've done with your family that you felt was a tremendous blessing, and you feel that you were a better person because you did it? What might that look like? Now your parents are on trial, and I'm not. And that focuses on your home now instead of mine. So that gives me a break. Yeah. Can you come help get her coat off, Rachel? Who has something to say? What is a recreational experience that you feel was good for you? Thank you. Thank you. Anybody else? And I've driven past there many times, but I'm always on the way to this or that when I do it, so there's no time to hit the brake pedal. That's the way that usually goes. What have you done as a family? That's something we've never done. Take off a week and spend time with each other. That sounds very, very good. I mean, I think that could be a value, especially if there was some structure to it. Especially if there was some activities that you built into that that happened while you were together that week, and you got more done than popcorn and Coca-Cola. But that's a good thing. I believe it's good to be with the family. I would recommend that. Oh, about 20 years ago, 25 years ago, my wife came to me and said that, she said, there's something seriously wrong with our home. I didn't know what she was going to say. And she said, all you did do is look at your date book and you'll see it in there. You don't see anything in there about family. It's always disappointment, that assignment, that get that done, leave at that date, get back at that date, go to that meeting then. That's all that's in there. And it doesn't say anything about, hey, someone's got a birthday. And there's a wedding anniversary. And Christmas is coming. And nothing's in there. She told me that she looked at my date book because there's nothing in there. So we have to plan for those things so they don't happen. Yeah, so my wife was trying to teach me. Anybody else have something from your home? Everyone's quiet. We see, Rachel, the difference between you and me is that I never worked with my dad or never worked with him, never played with him. He never taught me anything. He was just a person there in the house. In the morning he went to work, in the evening he came home. When he came home, it was done. No more of that. Now we listen to the Pittsburgh Pirates playing on the radio station. And back in those days, the radio station was real cracky. It didn't come through clear. About the time that Roberto Clemente was making a home run, he couldn't hear what the announcer was saying because it was too cracky. He would tell the rest of us to be quiet so he could hear. And that's the only thing I heard out of him. And so there was nothing we ever did together. And I have one memory of my dad, Rachel, that stands out as a highlight. It's a tremendous highlight to me. But he bought a tree to plant at the house. This tree had the roots were wrapped up in a burlap bag. And the tree was about maybe 12 feet tall. It just was a stalk. It was going to be a maple tree someday. he didn't own the house. He'd never owned a house in his life. The only ground he ever owned was in my mother's flower pot. He never owned any land. Or even a lot of land. Even a plot. And so the landlord didn't let him plant a tree where he wanted to plant it, so he didn't know what to do with it. So my grandmother lived 3 miles away, and he had no way to hold this tree in there. So I took the top of the tree, and he took the bottom, and we walked that tree to town and planted it. I did that with my dad. And I can still remember walking along with him in the back and I in the front, and we walked to town and planted a tree. And if you go to that village today and look at that tree, it's a mighty piece of tree. It grew all these years and it just stands out in my mind as one of the top highlights that I've had with my dad. So just think about that. That's recreation. That was recreation. Yeah, it was. And then many years later, I took the family back to see that tree. These are important things, what you're talking about there. Working with your family, butchering, you know. We never did any butchering. I came up here to Tennessee and found this place spends a week butchering. I thought, what in the world? Don't they ever stop eating? What's going on around here? you don't realize how new all that kind of stuff is to me. I don't know anything about it. And so There's a lot to learn in life. Now, there's a subtle difference between recreation and amusement. And I'm using this word amusement because it kind of helps build a bridge to this thing of a have fun mentality. So listen just a little bit. Recreation means recreate, to give new life or new freshness, to strengthen the spirit after toil, a diversion, to restore the health, to create anew, a wholesome, God-honoring change in the routine. That's recreation. Beautiful words and a beautiful idea. That's what recreation does. But now turn your Bible to Psalm 39. We'll look at the word amusement. This is Psalm 39 and verse 3. I'd like to read this verse to you. Please pay attention. My heart was hot within me. While I was musing, the fire burned. Then spake I with my tongue. This is a holy activity here. Musing means meditating. Musing means worshiping. Musing means thinking on something and then with the purpose, as we heard this morning, of acting upon it. Musing means that you spend time trying to understand it. Musing. When you put an A in front of the word. A is negative. A changes the meaning. A changes a positive word to a negative word. Something that's amusing is the opposite of the fire burning in your heart, of you meditating before the Lord, of you understanding His word or His truth. It's the opposite. No musing. Amusing. An amusement park. What does an amusement park do to you? It's the idea of entertainment. When you're doing something recreational, you are involved in it. When you're being entertained, you're sitting there giggling. You're not getting any benefit from it. You're sitting there watching. When you're being entertained, the other clown is doing it for you. Or whoever it is. And you're being amused. You're being entertained. To humor somebody. It's very, very closely related to the have fun mentality. It may not necessarily be healthy at all. Certainly it's not. Certainly it may not be holy at all. And for a Christian, it should be both. What a Christian does, should be both healthy and holy. But amusement is not always healthy or holy. The amusement ends when the fun or the excitement stops. You know, as long as you're being amused, entertained, hey, this is cute. But now it's over. Okay. It's over. Nothing's left. But true recreation is very different. The benefits of recreation continue after one returns to his normal routine. The benefits are still there. But the benefits are not there like that with amusement. When the amusement's over, oh, fun's over. Okay. Now what do we do, boys? Now where do you want to go? Let's go drag racing. Got to find something to do. How much horsepower is under that hood? Let's get this figured out. Understand that, John? So be careful about the word amusement. Musing, not amusing. Let the fire burn. Let the meditation rise. Let the worship of God rise your heart. That doesn't mean you spend all your time reading the Bible. I don't spend all the time reading the Bible. You know, I read the Bible, I try to, and frequently, and regularly, and systematically. But I don't spend all the time reading the Bible. It only takes about 70 hours a year to read your Bible through. 70 hours to read your Bible through from beginning to end. It takes about 70 hours. I think it takes me a little longer than that because I often go back over the same passage several times to reread it. It takes me longer than that. But you can read the Bible in about 70 hours. So before we continue this little study tonight, let us acknowledge there is a difference in personalities. For example, here's John and Dale sitting side by side. Now, there's a difference in personality in these two fellows here. I don't think I need to call that to your attention and just destacar what the difference is or call attention to what the difference is. I don't think I need to do that. There's a difference in personalities. There are some people, for example, who are more given to certain kinds of activities than others. And somebody might want to answer this question. Let's see if you have the freedom in your heart to answer this question. Would it be wrong if you would be a fun person to be with? Would that be wrong? Now, let's see what happens with that. Would it be wrong for you to be a fun person to be with? For someone to say, for example, see, this is Denise. For someone to say, I would enjoy spending the evening with Denise. Would that be wrong to want to do that? Or I would enjoy spending some time with Jesse. Or I kind of like to be around that Jared. He's kind of a fun person. He is a little more horsepower than some people. Especially when he's on a horse. Would that be wrong? What do you say about that? One girl over there shook her head real slowly, and she shook it so little that no one was supposed to be able to see that she shook her head. But I saw it. Would that be right or wrong? To be the kind of person that others would like to be with? It would not be wrong. Thank you, Lena. You are right, Lena. Is all fun wrong? I would say again, no. That's not what we're saying is a problem. We're saying a have fun mentality is the problem. We didn't say that a pleasant moment is wrong. We didn't say that smiling is wrong. We didn't say that enjoying a moment of laughter is wrong. We didn't say that it's wrong to enjoy something. If I said that, you heard me say the wrong thing or else I said it wrong. We have tried to limit this discussion to a have fun mentality, not to the fact that you're never going to have a pleasant time together with somebody else. Do we get that? Let us notice this fun mentality a little more closely. Are you ready to go for a journey? What I'm going to read to you now comes from Merriam-Webster's dictionary. So this is not a Bible verse, and this does not come from my invention. I will try to apply it to you, but this comes from the dictionary. Fun. That which provides amusement. Being playful often in a boisterous manner, in either speech or action. Violent or exciting activity or argument. Fun, a lack of seriousness. Perhaps with an ulterior purpose. Hoaxing, teasing. Arousing laughter against someone's person. So we all laugh at Marcus Andrew. Let's all laugh at Marcus Andrew. Let's laugh at him. Is there any fun in that? There's no fun for him. If the other person is not getting mutual benefit from it, it's not wholesome recreation. I can surely tell you that. Amen? Right. Where are you here? We don't do that. Someone's getting fun out of it, but not Marcus Andrew. We can't let you do that to him. And not on Highway 53 at Grace Christian Fellowship. Is that right? Fun often stresses mischievous or malicious fun. Fun is an opposition to earnestness. This does not sound like the life of Jesus to me at all. There's something seriously wrong here. We have to pay attention to this. What time is it, John? So I'm going to try to explain to you a little bit more what we mean by a have fun mentality. And please try to get this. By a fun-loving or a have-fun mentality, we reference a person whose purpose is to turn as much of life as possible into this spirit. Always looking for the next game or sport or time out. It is a perfect picture of non-commitment, of seeking to get one's own way, of doing it the way I want to do it. Not the way convention says, not the way others have dictated, but this is the way I'm going to go about this. That's a characteristic of a have fun mentality. There's an authority problem in that person's life. Life is not lived on a solid foundation. It is unpredictable and many times undependable. You don't know if they're going to be there or not. You don't know what the next thing is that's going to come up. The next thing is about ready to be sprung off. You don't know the next thing is going to be searched for, dug after, head out the driveway in pursuit of it. You don't know what that's coming up next. And so a person like that does not leave a solid foundation. He's not building on a solid foundation. It's a very shaky place to build. It's a very shaky way to live. Life becomes a search for satisfaction that somehow ever eludes the seeker. He never gets there. It's up front. If I could just do this yet, buy this yet, have this toy yet, change this vehicle for that one. If I could somehow another, but it's not there. You get there, but it's not there. You can hear the person, though these words probably never come out of the mouth. They do sometimes. I hear them. I'm not having fun. It is boring around here. So life is lived listening for the next train whistle for the train leaving town so I can go along. One's escapades become the theme for the discussion whenever he talks about what's going on in life. Life is entirely too selfish. It has to be fun. Courtship has to be a blast. The youth activity has to be a ball. You get that? And you guess what? I'm the life of the party. Hello. You ready to date a boy like that, Lena? There are plenty of them out there. I let somebody else have it. I told you that this subject applies to many areas of life. Now we're talking about courtship. I think it's a practical subject that a Christian will understand, don't you think? You decide if you want to marry someone who understands what true, godly, healthy recreation is about, and someone who's simply looking for the next fun chapter in life, the next comic book. This is not a godly testimony, what we're hearing about here. It is a train wreck waiting to happen. It will happen. Now listen, you were not expecting this, but listen to the next sentence. It seems like completely contradictory. It seems like Dale lost his rocker. It seems like something's going wrong here, but listen. The fun lover can very soon become angry, rapidly becomes angry. This fun-loving, laughing, jokey guy. Faith Builders was running the Hartwell Center, in Hartwell, Georgia. It's called the Conference Center itself has another name, but it's in Hartwell, Georgia. We rented that for a 6-week course for faith builders, and I was teaching a course on missions. And there was a gymnasium there, and we had a volleyball net set up in that gymnasium. And at the end of the day, maybe before supper, whether the girls were getting supper ready or after supper, the students would be out there with the teachers, the faculty, and they'd play some volleyball out there. And it was always very pure fun. It was fun. It was fun to do it after a day of standing in a classroom teaching all day. And students just doing essays and just writing stuff and just sitting at a desk. And out there was some activity. It was good. We were there for 6 weeks. And we had people there that didn't know a thing about volleyball. We had some girls there. They couldn't get the ball over the net. So we just left to keep on trying until they got it across. Okay? Is that okay, Isaiah? You just keep on getting that thing across there until you learn how to do it. That's the way we played. You know, it was encouraging for everybody. So one day, a neighboring church, no names to be given, asked if they could send their young people over and play one evening with the students of the school. And we agreed for that, and so they came over there. And as we were playing, our way of playing and their way of playing was not the same thing. They were going to win. They were going to beat. None of their team was going to make any mistakes. And if they did, woe be to them. They were hollered at. They were derided. They were shamed if they made a mistake. One by one, our students left that volleyball court and went over to the student assembly room there. And they were reading some things and they were visiting and they were doing some of their assignments. And I saw that we were losing our group, and so I walked over there to see what was going on. And there they were. More people came through the doors. And very soon, the only people playing over there was the team that came from the church. And they were angry. They were upset. They were having fun. They were really enjoying their game. Make a decision. You heard that. Make a decision. It takes a very short time to go from the laughy, jokey, hip hip hooray to can't have this. Losing. I'm here to win. You're messing me up. You're making me look bad. Wholesome recreation. My left foot. This is not what Grace Christian Fellowship needs to be doing. Now I'd like to take this fun-loving attitude and read some scriptures to you and see how it looks from the Bible. Titus chapter 2. Let's just start reading here in verse 6. Says young men in this verse. I think you could put young women in there too. I don't think this excludes Shechel. It doesn't exclude Dolores. Young men likewise exhort to be sober-minded, in all things showing thyself a pattern of good works, in doctrine showing uncorruptness, gravity, sincerity, sound speech that cannot be condemned, that he that is the contrary part may be ashamed, having no evil thing to say of you. Those young people on Highway 53 are a fine group of Christians. James chapter 3. Start reading here at verse 13. Who is a wise man and a dude with knowledge among you? Let him show out of a good conversation his works with meekness of wisdom. But if you have bitter envy and strife in your hearts, glory not in lying, not against the truth. This wisdom descendeth not from above, but is earthly, sensual, devilish. For envy and strife is there is confusion in every evil work. But the wisdom that is from above is first pure, then peaceable, gentle, and easy to be entreated. Full of mercy and good fruits, without partiality, without hypocrisy. And the fruit of righteousness is sown in peace of them that make peace. We had a midget. He was 16 years old. He came up to my belt. He was too small to use a first grader's desk. So though he was in sixth grade in my room, someone built a little platform to sit under his desk so he could put his feet on there because his feet did not touch the floor. This little midget was sick. He spent his time in school coughing and wheezing. He wheezed whenever he breathed. It was not very pleasant to hear that in the classroom. He died at a young age, but it was after he got out of school. Little Elam, the son of an Amish family. There were two midgets in that family. Elam was the smallest. His brother, younger brother, was taller than he was. But Elam was extremely small. We had big boys in school. We had big boys like Isaiah in that schoolroom. Those big boys learned to be gentle. They learned to love that little boy. They learned how to care for him. They learned when a fire engine went past the school how to pick him up so he could look out the window because he couldn't see out the window. And they would hold him up so he could see out. I'll tell you, it was a tremendous gift for our school to have that boy in our classroom. No one will ever regret it that he was in there. Gentle. Easy to be entreated. Full of mercy and good fruits. Without partiality, without hypocrisy. Elam got older. He got up to about 24 years old. We moved from Pennsylvania to Tennessee, from Tennessee to Costa Rica. Phone rang. Brother Dale, I wanted to talk to you. I'm in the hospital. But don't worry about me. I'm doing pretty good. But I wanted to hear your voice again. Have a good day, Brother Dale. A few days later, he died. I remember one day we had a baseball game, and the boys in the infield all came in right close to the pitcher. So the little ball that he hit that went out across the field about 10 feet, they could quickly pick it up and throw it to the first baseman. I said, no, boys, go back where you belong. Let's allow little Elam to make it to first base. Recreation. Wholesome recreation. And so we learned that way. And I think that this congregation should be known for that. Now, I thought I should say some practical things. I said a lot of things tonight. That's enough, I think, from me. But maybe some practical considerations. A few weeks ago over here at a brothers' meeting, it was not a members' meeting, it was a brothers' meeting, Brother Josh Beiler had a suggestion at the end of the meeting. You remember what it was? Did you put him up to it, Dolores? I don't know if someone instigated that or not, but I appreciated very much what he said. And I tried to say that in the meeting. Right, John? And with the increasing number of young people that we have here today over what we had 6 months ago, I agreed with a suggestion that he offered. And you know that I'm not opposed to you playing a volleyball game if you can receive some kind of a benefit out of an evening like this. It seems to me that any young person that can benefit from this kind of activity could also benefit from something a bit more of a recreational nature. Am I right about that? That's the way I would see it. But there's a difference between a carefully planned and purposed recreational activity, whatever it might happen to be, doesn't have to be volleyball. There's a difference between that and, well, you know what? I'm sick of this thing going on here. Let's have fun once. There's a big difference there. I'm trying to call attention to that difference. And so in that we would be in favor, am I right, John? Of a carefully structured, planned, a valuable time together, hiking somewhere, who knows what we're doing. My wife and I used to like to walk onto the top of mountains, and Mount Cardigan is so high in New Hampshire that it gets above the tree line, and there's only solid rock from there up to the top. You get to the place where the tree line stops, and you're above that now, and now it's rock. And Suzanne was 3 weeks away from giving birth to our first son, Virgil. And she made it to the top of those rocks. On top of those rocks, up there, those bare rocks, there was a fire tower that went up above there. So we climbed up the steps, and a man was in the fire tower, so he opened the trap door and left us in. Now we're in the tower up there. And he said, "Woman, get back down off this mountain. I fixed broken bones. I've never delivered babies. Get down off of here." So we made it down. That's recreation, right? That can be a very valuable thing to do together. And maybe a little hot dog along the path someplace would be in order too, or something like that. A little iced tea, maybe. But plan your things that way rather than this kick up your heels kind of activity. You understand? There's a big difference. And you'll be far happier. And you'll enjoy it more. And you'll remember it a long time. And somebody was edified. Somebody was built up. A testimony was left behind. It's something holy for you. And not just have fun all over, all now done. So that's what I have to say. Now, I thought I'd open this up for your discussion, and I thought I'd begin the discussion by asking a question. And then you could ask the questions from here on. I did not say much of anything about sports. Where does sports enter this picture? And none of you know anything about this side of my life. But sports. So on Saturday nights, I used to go to York US 30 Dragaway. And what that is there, it's an airstrip that for that night is turned into a racetrack for modified cars. So you might have 1,000 horsepower sitting out there in an engine, and you're using some kind of jet fuels or something like that to run that thing, and you get 1,000 horsepower out of what otherwise would be a 250, 300 horsepower engine. And you have this car built up with tires on there, having accordingly to take that kind of power. And this thing is racing down the track. And you're smelling this fuel burning up a tremendous amount at a time. You're smelling that rubber burning. You're smelling all the cigarette and cigar smoke. You're smelling all the beer and whiskey that's being drunk all around you. They're smelling the perfume of the lady behind you. All these smells are mixed together. And you hear the swearing, and you hear the coarse talk and the coarse laughter of the men who are sitting around you in the grandstands. You get home at 4 o'clock on Sunday morning and sitting in the Sunday school class at 10 o'clock that same Sunday morning in a liberal Mennonite church. Does a Christian belong where I was? Is that where a Christian ought to be? And you're driven to do it. When it's over, there's not a bit of value in it. Just absolutely as empty as can be. And somehow or another, a Christian must decide if that is what God is calling them to do for their testimony. I will tell you, when you're in a place like that, It's not very conducive to walk up and down the grandstands handing out tracts. I will assure you that. The people could look at you and say, and just, who are you to be in a place like this? You don't belong there. Or a nightclub. You don't know what those things are, and that's good you don't. But we live those things. Where does sports enter this picture? Somebody suggested that I give you a chance to take a look at that question. It's not wrong to have a baseball bat. I suppose it's not wrong to have a glove either. When I taught school many years ago, the students were too poor to each one have their own glove. Many of them didn't have it. They just caught the ball with their bare hands. That's just the way it was. The people didn't have money to buy a ball glove. Not where I was teaching. But we played baseball sometimes. I enjoyed it. They did too. I don't think it's wrong to do that. I don't know. I never heard of anyone playing ball around here. I don't know if you do that or not. I don't know if you've ever done it, because I don't know. In Costa Rica, only Nicaraguans play baseball. No Costa Ricans play that. That's the difference between Nicaragua and Costa Rican. They play softball or hardball, but the Ticos do not. They only play soccer. And I feel there's a place to enjoy that game and to have a nice time together. But I just can hardly imagine seeing Jesus sitting in the grandstands down in Dallas with the Dallas Cowboys playing. I just cannot imagine Jesus sitting there and watching that. First of all, it's totally amusement and it's not recreation, not for him. Someone down there might be getting some exercise out of it. A good bit of anger, too, and some other disturbances. And the alcohol will be flowing all around you, and not all the girls will be dressed very well. That's just the way that is. So I think there's a time when Highway 53 needs to draw a line. You know what I mean by that? I think there's a time when there are things we do and things we don't do. There's things to enjoy and things to save yourself from and to put your testimony somewhere else. But I don't think it's wrong to play a sports activity, or we call that have a game of some kind like that. I don't. Do you do softball around here? I never heard of it. You do. Oh, that's go pay think. Thank you. So that's what you do. Yeah, that's right. The line is a little harder to draw when you. I'll just take the risk and say this. Do you mind if I say this? I've got a granddaughter down here at the high school in Woodbury. She's on some of the sports teams down there. In one hand, I sometimes wonder if I would be a little bit of encouragement to her if I'd stop by a game sometime and watch her playing. But the uniforms are not proper. And I'm not sure that's the best way to do it. And if that would get started, then where would you draw a line? And so we've chosen to not do that. Although when she comes to see me, I sometimes ask her how it's going in her efforts there, and she tells me about it. But she is not expecting me to come to those events. I know that. So I thought I'd just ask you that question. Brother John, maybe you can help them discuss this thing a little bit. Can you help them do that?
Do you have any thoughts, any questions? How do we make this practical? I think we all live here. And how do y'all make it practical in your lives? What are some things you have come to your mind with the discussion?